You're listening to Upfront. I'm Brian Edwards-Tiekert. Returning now to the status of families forcibly separated at the border under the Trump administration's zero-tolerance policy, we thought we'd turn to one of the organizations that does hands-on work with immigrants when they're in detention and after release. The Refugee and Immigrant Center for Education and Legal Services, or RAISES, grabbed national headlines last month when an online campaign to raise money so they could bail out parents awaiting hearings mushroomed from an initial goal of $1,500 to over $20 million raised. Last week, they went to Washington with a novelty check to advocate for the mass release of detained parents. Today, we're going to talk about the day-to-day grind of getting people out one at a time. We're joined now by Jennifer Falcone, their communications director. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Brian.
First of all, how many people held under the zero-tolerance policy are even getting bond set?
So there's several different processes. For instance, you never know how much bond will be set at. We pay bonds ranging from $1,500 to last week we paid a bond for $15,000. The way the bond process is a little bit different from a bond that you and I might pay is that this has to be money cash up front. There's no bail bondsman and you can't put up collateral. So these families need, you know, to have $15,000 cash to be able to be bonded out. A lot of the time they also need a sponsor and already have travel plans in place that need to be confirmed with ICE or DHS so that they can even be bonded out.
Are the immigration courts under any obligation to set bond for them to make it possible to bond them out?
Well, it just depends. If they're asylum seekers, then yes, they need to go and go before a judge to have bond set. And the bond, you know, again, can range in prices. And we have seen a uptick in the price of the bonds we're paying since zero tolerance was implemented.
So how many people have you actually been able to bail out with this fund?
Last week, we were able to bond out 15 people at $92,000. The week before, it was 8 people at $44,000. It's a slow and expensive process, and that's why we wanted to go to DC to try and advocate and work with DHS to be able to bond people out. At this rate, it would take us over a year to be able to bond out all the families who have been separated.
So can you walk me through what the principal obstacles are to bonding people out faster?
One of the main obstacles we have is first being able to find these people who have been separated. The government is not helping us locate parents or children. It's something that we've essentially had to become private investigators to find ourselves and are relying on tips from NGOs and other attorneys who will contact us and ask for the money to bond out their clients. Another hurdle, I think, is finding a sponsor. Sometimes somebody seeking asylum doesn't have a family member they can come and live with. So it's up to us sometimes to be able to find a sponsor who will house them, that we can submit that information to DHS.
And that's what sponsor means, literally someone you can crash with or you will be crashing with?
Yeah, and you'll stay. And, you know, I think there's a misconception that people seeking asylum don't show up to court or they're not going to pay their bonds. But that's where why the work we do is so important, because when we're representing these vulnerable communities and offering them low-fee legal services or pro bono legal services, they're 5 times more likely to return to their case.
You mean to show up in court?
Yes, I'm sorry, to return to court.
So that's getting the parents out. That's still one step removed from getting them back together with their kids. What's that been like?
Then we still have to try and find their children and prove parentage, prove that they have somewhere to stay. In some instances, the bar is continuously being moved. There was a grandmother we were working with her story was in the New York Times, and she was told that to get her grandson back, she would need a two-bedroom apartment instead of the one-bedroom apartment she had. So the grandmother essentially got another job, moved into a second bedroom, but had to work more often. And then she was told that she couldn't get her grandson back because she had been working too much. These are the obstacles that asylum seekers deal with, and we as attorneys deal with, because things are constantly changing and we have to kind of keep up with it and try to figure out on our own what they're doing. ICE doesn't really give us updates too often.
How much of this is kind of consistent with how asylum seekers were treated before, and how much of this is like escalated bureaucratic impediments under the Trump administration?
I think that this is a clear indication that Trump and his administration have no regard for international and domestic law when it comes to asylum seekers, as we are detaining them even as they arrive at port of entries. We've just begun mass detention of these asylum seekers, and that, like, legally, we are supposed to give them the opportunity to submit a valid claim for asylum in the U.S.
So what do all the difficulties you laid out portend for the next court-imposed deadline for reunification? By July 26th, I believe, there are some 2,600 kids over the age of five who are supposed to be reunited with their parents.
I think it's very worrisome about what the administration is going to do to reunite these families. We have seen documents given to parents saying, essentially, you will be deported with your child, or you can elect to leave your child and be deported without them. I think it's problematic because if I was given this situation, I would want to be connected with my child and may make the choice to be deported with my child, just so that we can be reunified. Some of these families haven't spoken to their kids in weeks, or don't even know where they are. It's very problematic and worrisome.
Finally, Jennifer Falcone, when you do successfully get parents out and get them reunited with their children, what's in place for them? What challenges are they facing?
Support is a big problem. I think many of these families are coming out of detention centers extremely traumatized from what they've been through. Many of them don't even speak English, and many speak indigenous languages other than Spanish. So there are many hurdles, and I think that it's important to look at the resettlement of the refugees once they are released, and how we can be sympathetic to their plight and work with them.
Jennifer Falcone, thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian.
Jennifer Falcone is Communications Director with the Refugee and Immigration Center for Education and Legal Services, or RAICES.